Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic. It's a little hot and a little humid, but it's going well.
I think my socks melted.
That's not the heat. That's just your feet.
I got into my truck after work today. It said 38 degrees Celsius, which is like 100.4 Fahrenheit. That's hot.
That's pretty hot. Whether you're American or Canadian, that's hot.
That's hot. It doesn't sound any better in Fahrenheit. It sounds worse in Fahrenheit. It's 38 degrees. No, it's 100. No, it's 38 degrees.
What were you just telling me about your wife when it comes to temperatures?
Oh, well, she switches. In the winter, everything's always
Celsius.
It's 0, minus 5, plus 2, minus 1. There's a point that I haven't quite figured out yet. In the summer, when the heat goes up, it turns to Fahrenheit. It's 25. It's 26. It's 107.
What?
Wait a minute. I'm not sure what just happened there.
I'm not tracking here.
I went in for a glass of water. I came out, and the temperature rose by 80 degrees. I'm not sure what happened. Yeah, no, somewhere along the way, yeah. She stops going with the Celsius. I don't even know if she realizes she does it.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it was 95 out there. Well, it was only 24 in here.
I don't know what happened between here and that door.
Oh, it's one of those mysteries of life.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been hot. It's been sunshine. Mind you, we did have a bit of a thunder lightning storm that lasted for about a half an hour this morning.
We lost power this morning for about 6 hours.
Lovely.
Yeah. 6:30 it went out, and Stella had texted or something. I think it was around 12:30, 1 o'clock. It's like, oh. I had to tell them, okay. Don't be opening the fridge a lot because it's not going to cool down again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, watch out because of flooding, because of all the rain that's happening, yada, yada, yada. If you're going to take a shower, it's a hot water heater is electric. So take a short shower so you don't run out of hot water.
Unless you know somebody's taking a shower after you, then use up all the hot water. Why wouldn't you? Have a cold shower because it's hot. It's like 500 degrees apparently.
They've done this before, not in a blackout, but it's like, how do you use up a 40-gallon tank? What are you doing in the shower? I don't want to know. But still, like, that's a lot of hot water to go through, right?
Yeah. Yep. Ah, oh, good times. It's just beginning of the summer, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be worse.
It could be.
Right? At least we're getting out there, and it's nice weather outside, albeit hot, but... You sit on the porch after doing a bunch of work outside, and you have a beverage and relax, and the dog's laying there nicely. Yep. People walk by and wave, and you wave back with all five fingers if you like them.
Or just one.
Or just one if they're not your favorite neighbor. Yeah. We had our long weekend there because it's Canada Day on the 1st.
Yep.
Everybody's taking the Wednesday. But we got Monday off instead.
Hmm.
They decided, you know what? We're going to close Monday. So you get a 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
As opposed to a 2-day weekend. You work 2 days.
Hmm.
Then you get 1 day off. And then you work 2 days. But then a lot of people are, well, you gave us the Monday, but I'm taking the Wednesday to Friday off.
Yeah.
So for the people of like me that are going into work, we get 3 days of quiet.
Yeah. Nice.
Because everybody else is taking the 1st off.
Mm-hmm.
And any of our U.S. clients are getting ready for the 4th of July on the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm taking Friday off because I got to go shopping for stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So, yes, this is a great week.
Yeah.
I am, one, right? One really busy day and then just relax. Put something on your computer at work, have something playing on one screen, doing work on the other screen. Ah, oh, beautiful. This and the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because I work between Christmas and New Year's.
Mm, so do I.
And people, why do you do that?
Stuff A, has to happen.
I get everything done.
Yeah.
And B, I'm not bothered by anybody because they've all taken that week
no
off.
There's no interruptions, exactly.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I'm being paid to sit there and do nothing at work. Yeah. This is awesome. Unless my boss is listening, then nope, we just do nothing but work.
It's so busy.
We get so much done when he's not there.
It's steady. Steady work. Steady work.
Yeah. As long as I'm employed, that's all I care these days.
Yeah, yeah. That's important.
But you know what could be better?
Retirement.
Yeah. Being rich and retired.
Yeah.
Or paddling down the Missouri River.
Oh, yes, yes.
Right?
That was a poor segue, but
well, because you ruined it.
It'll work.
It'll work. We talked about a little bit about the Missouri River speed record. So four-person team of paddlers have launched an ambitious attempt on to set a new speed record on the Missouri River, taking on its full length in a continuous ultra-endurance event.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
People don't normally do the full length?
No. No, little bits and pieces.
Okay.
Challenge for the Missouri River Speed Record team is to travel the entire course of the Missouri River from its headwaters near Three Forks, Montana in the Rocky Mountains to its confluence with the Mississippi River named near St. Louis.
Hmm.
Louis? Louis. Hmm? St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah. As fast as possible in a 23-foot-long canoe. So four of them in a 23-foot-long canoe.
Hmm. I guess one person can just take a nap while the other three paddle.
The other three paddle. he says, we're not just trying to go fast. We're trying to do everything right for thousands of miles, says 50-year-old Scott Miller of Minneapolis, who is the team captain. The Missouri is unpredictable. Wind, heat, and nearly 1,000 miles of reservoirs with little to no current all stack up. Now, they're doing this right now. They started last week, so they're should be in their groove by now.
Yeah.
He says the Missouri River presents a uniquely complex challenge. In addition to its length, paddlers must contend with large reservoirs, flowing river sections, wind-driven waves, commercial barge traffic, multiple dam portages. Also, summer conditions can include extreme heat, strong headwinds, and rapidly changing water levels. It doesn't say anything about rainstorms and thunder lightning storms.
They're going to run into it.
They are. They are.
It says, would be the barge traffic that I'd be worried about. Because you see on some of these rivers, especially the Mississippi, like you're seeing like a tug pushing like six barges.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the main way to...
My thing would be is if I see it's coming, I'm getting way over to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
Just totally...
It's going to waste time.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just running down the middle, they're going to have to be dodging barges and tugs.
Yep.
And
yep.
Hmm.
We know that we'll run into some big storms, Miller says. We know we'll have high winds. We know in places we'll probably have low water because there wasn't a ton of snow in the mountains. What was there has melted off pretty early, so we'll probably be hitting bottom and hitting sand and rocks in places and dealing with the big winds and waves in the reservoirs. But it's not catastrophically low. We're happy about that. We think we can get through. When the storms come and big winds and waves come, we've got strategies for dealing with that, including going to shore and taking cover as needed, which you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Especially thunder lightning storms. You don't want to be out there. The Missouri River Speed Record Team's effort brings together experienced endurance paddlers and a coordinated ground support crew as a plan built around river conditions, dam portages, and changing weather patterns. I've been following along before they've even started, and just some of the training they've been doing and everything like that. They definitely know what they're doing. Miller previously led a squad who set the Guinness World Record for the fastest paddle down the Mississippi in 2023, which we covered that. He is joined this year in a canoe on the Missouri River by three other Minnesotans, Scott Duffus, Kurt Leitz, and Ladia Zednik. They will paddle in rotating shifts to maintain near continuous forward progress.
It's going to be hard to focus on that. Like, I imagine, like, one person's going to take a break, or they're going to make food or something, right? So I guess, well, there's always a spare person.
There's always a spare person who's snoozing, and then if someone gets tired, they can quickly grab a paddle and take over.
Yeah.
So they'll paddle in shifts, right? I would say we can only control what we're able to do, Light says. Personally, I don't pay any attention to forecasts beyond 5 days, which is 100%. We all know there's going to be times when we have to adapt, improvise, and overcome, so we're just going to roll with it. And that's the thing. When it comes to weather, even when I'm doing my canoe trips and, you know, you're going for a week or something like that, I look at what they're saying, but the farther out, the less attention I pay to it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll pay attention for the first three, maybe 4 days, but definitely the first three. Here's what's coming. And then sort of, okay, well, this is what they say is supposed to be coming. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I don't 100% believe.
Oh, no.
Right? Because things change all the time.
Yep.
Right? I've had it where it's supposed to be beautiful, sunny days for a week. And then next thing you know, you're windbound on shore under a tarp because it's just teeming down with rain. And I've had the vice versa as well. Well, we better put those tarps up because it's supposed to pour rain. And next thing you know, you're out, you're looking at the northern lights. You're looking at, you know, bright, sunshiny, blue skies with not a cloud in sight. You know, so yeah, the weather thing, yeah.
How many jobs out there other than weathermen could you just be so wrong? And it's like, well, you're kind of close.
Stockbroker?
But they generally do nail it. They have an idea of where things are going. But with weather, it's like, oh, well, you know, we thought we're going to get 2 feet of snow, but we only got a centimeter, so
Well, and now, over the last few years, I don't know if you've noticed, but everything is in centimeters. Yes. We're getting 3 centimeters of snow, but it still registers from all those years of
inches,
3 inches of snow. Yeah. No, 3 centimeters. Not an. That's just over an inch.
I have to recalibrate.
I got
to
recalibrate my thinking when it comes to to that. A dedicated support crew using both motorboats and shore vehicles will assist at key access points along the river, providing food, equipment, safety oversight, and real-time adjustments as conditions evolve. And a film crew is documenting the journey.
How are they doing that? They're at travel with them. I assume they're good.
I think they got small cameras.
See them pass by
the
bridges.
Boat.
Yeah, I guess you
don't. And then they got them following along as they went.
Well,
look how we did the. Well, we had somebody in the boat with
Trent
us too.
Severn.
But we did the Trent Severn. Mm. We had people outside that was taking video as we
External,
were coming up and stuff like that too, right? At more than 2,340 miles, the Missouri River is generally considered the longest river in North America, touching 7 states as it meanders through the heart of the United States. Missouri River Speed Record team will attempt to break the longstanding fastest known paddle record set in 1980 on the Missouri River by legendary paddlers Verlin Kruger, and Steve Landick. 33 days, 18 hours, 45 minutes. They plan to beat that.
That record's been held since 1980?
1980. It's like 46 years now, right?
Wow.
Miller says that the record remains a formidable benchmark, requiring not only elite physical conditioning, but also precise logistics, strategic navigation, and the ability to endure long days and nights on the water.
Yeah, that's tough.
However, he added that he likes the Missouri River Speed Records team's chances to set the new fastest known paddle record. So they've done everything. They've crossed their T's, dotted their I's.
Lots of training, a lot of logistics.
Yep. Barring any unforeseens, like Mother Nature, goofy accident that I mean, it happens. Somebody steps out of the boat and
absolutely.
It happens, right?
Get hit in the head with a fish.
Right. That definitely happens.
Mm-hmm.
We have done a lot of training and preparation, and we have a great support team, Miller says. However, we know there will be high wind, storms, big waves of battle against heat, injury, sleep deprivation, dehydration, and a host of other maladies, so it's certainly no guarantee. It's the unknown that gets you. the Missouri River Speed Record Team's final practice trip in preparation for its speed record attempt on the Missouri River took place May 8th to 10th, including paddling on Lake Francis Case near Pittstown and Lewis and Clark near Yankton. We've each done some paddling. We've done some paddling together since then. But in terms of a full training run with support from the team and testing all the systems, the Yankton trip was the final run through, Light says. He said that training run went swimmingly for the most part. A, don't use the word swimmingly. Is that, you know. So did you guys tip? And for the most part, there's going to be tweaks as they go. We did learn a lot, Light says. A lot of small details needed to be ironed out, but there were no major hiccups. Nothing that needed to be completely reworked or redesigned. We did run into low water below Yankton. We also learned that we can hop out of the canoe and drag it as necessary, and we understand that that's going to be a part of this adventure. With four guys and all their gear that they keep for the day, You got to think that's going to be a, you're not picking that up and really.
Yeah, you're going to, and well, what are their resupply? Do they mention it?
Well, they got the land team.
But yes, but.
They stop where the land team is and they jump out, they have lunch.
Hmm.
They have snacks and stuff with them, water or liquids with them to rehydrate, that sort of stuff. I'm sure they got lights in there with batteries.
Yeah.
Some camera gear in there.
Solar panels, charging stuff.
So it's not, then seats for the four of them and hopefully padding. Light says he and his team members want to take in all the scenery along the Missouri River that they possibly can during the speed record attempt.
Yeah, we're gonna do some sightseeing.
Did you guys see that? Nope. It's absolutely epic. I would point out as someone who has never seen the stretch of the river in southeast Dakota, it is not very familiar with the Missouri River generally. I think that stretch is underappreciated by the broader public. It's a real gem right there around Yankton. Light says the Missouri River Speed Record team members saw several people cheer for and wave to them.
Cool.
Including from the shores of the Missouri River, from boats traveling on the river, and from house decks overlooking the river.
Wow.
During their southeast South Dakota practice trip last month. People on that wonderful
pedestrianized
bridge right in Yankton were ringing cowbells and cheering us on. It was a real injection of energy, and we're looking forward to seeing those friends and followers when we come through the Yankton area on this run.
Cool.
So even the practice runs, people are getting behind
them. I know, that's cool.
Ready to watch this happen, right? Miller says Missouri River Speed Record team members were feeling pretty great on the Monday, the day before their launch, as they prepare to embark on their epic adventure down the full distance of the Missouri River. Like I say, they're doing that already. We're pretty organized, he says. We've got a lot of really good support crew members here. We've been here for a couple of days getting ready, so we're in pretty good shape. We've been preparing for this for like 2 years. We've done a lot of training trips, perfected all our systems. We've got all the right equipment. We've got good cooks, good base camp people. And we're a good plan for moving the base camp every 24 hours. Got good support boats. We got our documentary film crew here. Everything is going pretty darn good, actually.
Good for them.
Yeah, you just jinxed it. Missouri River Speed Record team's attempt to set a new speed record on the Missouri River will be tracked in real time with GPS tracking, updates, and progress reports available via their website, MissouriRiverSpeedRecord.com. They also have Facebook and Instagram pages. You can follow their stuff there. So, yeah, go follow this. They're in the middle of it right now. Well, not in the middle, but they started already last week. Check them out. Watch what they're doing as they go. And, yeah, barring any unforeseen, I think they should be able to do this.
Anything less than a month, and they're going to beat the record.
Mm-hmm. So they're hoping for, like, 27, 28 days.
So
knock a good few days off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Set that benchmark for another 50 years.
And Verlin Krueger did it with just two of them.
Just two of them. Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing with a lot of these things. When we talk about the Brent Run, the Meanest Lane,
there's comparables
stuff up here. There's comparables about, well, they did it in a cedar strip canoe as opposed to your carbon.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Your lightweight carbon Kevlar canoe. They did it with this. They did it with that. They didn't have this. They didn't have that.
It's really
that.
Hard to compare.
They didn't have headlamps to, you know, to light your way in the middle of the night sort of thing.
Hmm.
So they didn't have all the lightweight gear and the quick, easy to make foods and stuff that we have today. So...
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
It will be. Let's just head back to Oregon for a minute. We've been talking about this for the last little while. About the citizen push to repeal Oregon's new small watercraft permit requirement. So we talked there a couple episodes ago how they needed so many, like 117,000 signatures to get on the ballot in November.
Yeah,
to
so that it could be voted for.
Yeah, have it repealed. Organizers say they've just collected 36,000 of the 117,000 signatures needed.
With that industry, or not just the industry, with the interest of people who do paddle and who are interested in paddling and don't want to be paying this extra fee and whatnot, I'm surprised they aren't getting much traction with this getting on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Oregon legislators passed the bill in 2025, and then this group, Let Us Paddle, filed a petition to reverse the regulations. Waterway access permits are nothing new, but the new requirement is now to include paddle crafts such as paddle boards and kayaks that are under 10 feet long.
That pretty much covers everything and everybody.
Well, how many paddle craft do you have that are under 10 feet?
Well,
Aha!
I have a set of paddle board.
And how big is it?
I don't know.
10 foot something? 11, 12?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the measurement. I do have a whitewater kayak. That's pretty darn short.
Yeah. The compliance part of the waterway access permits has been going on since 2020. This is nothing new. Oregon State Marine Board Boating Safety Program Manager. Oh my God, how does he fit that on a card? Brian Paulson says, for stand-up paddle boards, a significant amount of stand-up paddle boards are over 10 feet, so they've been required to have a permit for a long time. Permits cost $6 for a week, $20 for a year, $35 for 2 years. Part of the revenue from the permits helps fund OSMB's waterway access grants. Those grants fund projects to help people get their non-motorized watercraft into rivers and lakes. Miller's Landing is a phenomenal boating access site that was finished last year, Paulson says. The Marine Board, through the Waterway Access Grant Fund, paid for almost half of that particular project. Other part of the revenue goes towards keeping Oregon's waterways clean. It is for the aquatic invasive species prevention, which is really important for safeguarding Oregon's waterways from things like quagga mussels, zebra mussels, and golden mussels. Now, when it comes to permits like this, I have no problem with it if they can prove that the money is being used for what they're, like, these things is what they're saying is to be used
for. So often what you see, especially around here, is it goes into general revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing is like, you know, Algonquin Park here in Ontario is a super popular park. It's like the crown jewel in Ontario's park system. If doesn't matter if it's the smallest park, the biggest park, the most popular park, the one in the park that never gets anything, it all goes into general revenue. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, how are we tracking what, you know, like, I guess they can see what each one's making, but it doesn't mean that Algonquin gets better served. It just means they get, it helps fill the pot more than other parks. Whereas this here is like, well, is this money going to something good? Like, prove it to us that you are... This money is earmarked for these services for quagga mussels and zebra mussels and whatever. Prove it to us that you're actually using your. It's going to improve the outdoors and protect us and protect the rivers. And I don't know. Too often it goes in general revenue and just money just disappears. So it just becomes another tax.
Yeah.
General revenue tax.
Let Us Paddle argues that the price is an infringement on people's ability to recreate. This permit requirement really does deter families from going out, they say. A family of six kayakers at $20 a permit each is a costly burden.
It's expensive.
Yeah. Some people just walk up and start signing. They recognize our flyers. They want to be part of this petition. Wendy Mogstedt said back in February. Months later, July, or June, end of June, beginning of July, the momentum is waning. Most of the paddleboarders that were asked about it at Riverbend Park said they didn't even know the permit was a requirement. Or that there was a petition against it.
People aren't paying attention.
They're not paying attention.
They didn't get traction. They didn't get the word out the way it should have been.
No. Petition has less than half the signatures it needs for November. So most likely this is not going to be going anywhere.
Not
going
to happen.
No. So unless something miraculous happens within the next couple of days, it's not happening. So they're going to be stuck paying that. But like I say, I have no problems with something like that if it's proven that it is going towards what
they say it's going towards.
Yeah. Keep our waterways done, make some access points, that sort of thing. Oakley doggy. Yes, six people with six, $120 for the year.
Yeah.
That's for the year though.
Yeah, but you know what? Some people can't even afford that. When you're struggling to put food on the table and pay rent, heat and hydro, then you know what? This is something that you could normally just get out and enjoy the water. Suddenly it's like, I can't even afford the free stuff anymore.
Right. So the question then becomes is, how much are they governing it? Like how much are the police or the conservation officers hanging around?
What's the tickets?
Going,
what's the penalty for
that? I don't know.
Well,
it's probably more than $20 a person. Yeah.
I'm sure we're gonna hear more of this over the next couple of years.
We'll see what happens because they're not the only state to do it.
No, exactly. Right? Everybody's coming up with everybody sees or all governments see, oh, that's a potential revenue source.
Yep.
And it's like, I hate it when they do that. This is, you shouldn't be looking at all kinds of stuff like this as revenue sources. Sure. It costs, everything costs more these days, like gasoline and, you know, to do anything these days, it costs money. But now governments are going, I need to do the roads. I need to, fix that bridge. I need to build this building. I need to maintain that park. So it's just, it's money, money, money.
It's their way of avoiding the word new tax.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Right.
No, and so they see it as
not a tax.
It's a targeted. So I guess what you could say is it's a targeted tax. It won't get the people who don't go out and paddle. It's only going to get the people who do paddle. So it's not going to, you're not going to be dipping into general revenue for, everybody's going to pay this tax. I don't kayak. I don't canoe. Well, you're all going to pay it. But in this case, you are targeting the end user of what this money is supposed to be used for.
So, if you're getting out there paddling for fun, is this just not a fun tax?
Exactly.
They're taxing our fun?
Yeah. You could tax a lot of stuff.
Right?
I enjoy going on long walks. Oh, sidewalks are taxed now. There's a toll on the sidewalk for when you walk in your neighborhood. What?
Because your shoe soles
are wearing off
on the concrete.
Yeah, I don't know where it ends.
It doesn't. That's the problem. Anyway, we'll see if we hear anything else about this or if it's now got that stake through the heart like a good old vampire.
Yeah. We'll see.
Western Kentucky, their university won the concrete canoe competition during the American Society of Civil Engineers Civil Engineering Student Championships held June 25th to 27th at Fairmont State University. We talked about the concrete canoes a couple years back.
Yeah, and you're always hearing about it in the news and this, that, the other thing. And people are building these canoes out of concrete, and everybody's like, wow, that's crazy. But you know what? A lot of people, like even sailboats. Sailboats are known to be made from concrete sometimes. It's a source, and you can make it very light. You can make it pretty light.
It is weird because you think concrete, and the first thing you think of is like one of those big bricks or something like that, right?
Well, it's going to sink to the bottom.
So wait, if my apartment building is made of concrete and there's a tsunami, my apartment building should float, yes?
Float away.
Pick it up and float.
Yeah.
It marked Western Kentucky's first society-wide concrete canoe competition title. Championships followed 21 regional student symposia held this spring in the United States, China, and India. In the concrete canoe competition, teams are judged on final canoe product, oral presentations, a design paper, and race results. This year's canoes were tested at Tiger Lake State Park through slalom and sprint races. Concrete canoe has been ASCE's flagship student competition since 1988. Event challenges civil engineering students to apply engineering principles, project management, and team building skills, which is pretty good rather than just sitting in the classroom. Yeah. You're actually
putting practical. You're putting it to work, putting your knowledge to work.
Western Kentucky's entered this year's competition after several strong national finishes. The team placed third last year, fifth in both 2023-2024, and first in 2026. Going into this year, we wanted to create a new hull design to help us move through the water faster during races, because we always thought that's what our problem was with not being able to get higher than third place in nationals, says WKU co-captain Sophia Adams. So going in, we said the hull design is what we need to focus on, and sure enough, it really was. Fresh set of eyes, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Western Kentucky's canoe, the USS Alliance, honored an American Revolution-era warship of the same name, weighs 182 pounds, 19 feet 6 inches long.
Try portaging that one.
No, thank you. All of a sudden, my Nova Craft doesn't seem so bad. In addition to winning the overall concrete canoe competition, Western Kentucky received top honors for its technical presentation and final product. In the concrete canoe competition, Western Kentucky finished first, followed by Missouri University of Science and Technology and New York University Tandon School of Engineering. Congrats to everybody.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's pretty cool. Like I say, just you're thinking concrete canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's float that baby. Boom, and down it went.
I looked at the photos online. The designs are very sleek. They're long and sleek. So it sort of reminds me of some of these racing craft in the Olympics. It's long and like the nice. It's just they look sleek. They look like they could go fast. Nice job.
And good apparently work. They do.
Yes, yes.
We're going back out to New Brunswick again.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Drum beats and rhythmic chants encouraged protesters as they launched their canoes and kayaks into the Nashwauk River, showing opposition to a planned mining operation near Fredericton. But 120 people showed up to paddle the Nashwauk River watershed, which they fear would be affected by the Sisson mine is built. So it's just a proposed mine right now. It's not but we've seen pictures of what this pit mine is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Planned Sisson mine is a 27-year project operation to extract tungsten and molybdenum near Fredericton. The 1,200-hectare project will include a 750-hectare tailings pond to store the waste produced by the mine. That's the thing that gets everybody all the time is the tailing pond.
Yeah, because
what if it leaks?
They invariably fail. Like they don't all fail, but when they do, it's bad.
Yep. Protesters said they fear a breach in the tailings pond could lead to pollution in the watershed. Traditional Grand Chief of the Wolastoq. Did I say it right that time?
Yeah, Wolastoq.
Wolastoq. Grand Council Ron Tremblay said he is concerned that the nobody is listening to the unvoiced, which are the trees and the animals and insects and the birds and the fish and all the flora and fauna. So we want to speak on their behalf to protect them. Tremblay said chemicals can't be mixed with the environment because they could get consumed by insects and wildlife. He doesn't think the measures put in place by the government to prevent damage to the environment will be effective. I have zero confidence in all those conditions each time a project moves forward, be it mining or be it a pipeline. There's always higher risks of leaks. Project proponent Northcliffe Resources Limited is working towards meeting 40 conditions put in place by the province for the project to go ahead. Department of Environment spokesperson Vicky Lutz says the Sisson Mine project received an environmental impact assessment approval extension to December 2030, ensuring the project balances in development with environmental protection. So they got till 2030 to do this environmental impact, right? Study. Mm-hmm. So that's still 4 years away before they even start.
Yes. So, no, the current environmental impact lasts through to 2030. After 2030, they would have to do a new environmental impact study. So they did get it extended to 2030 to give them time to get this project off the ground. But I'm just wondering, how could they do an impact study and say, yeah, this open pit mine with this potential damage to the Nashwauk River, like, I don't know how they can say, this works. Mm-hmm. It's like a gigantic open pit mine, and it's not mining is not a clean process, and New Brunswick is mostly pristine forests. There, a lot of the work in New Brunswick is taking down trees. Irving does it a lot. They cut the trees down and replant 20 years later, come back, cut the new trees. So it's a renewable resource.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not renewable.
No. She also notes that the company is updating its feasibility study and is required to conform to current best practices and technical standards. Chris Arsenault, a Fredericton resident and local physician, said he is concerned about the health risks the chemical waste could pose for his community. Putting things like arsenic into the water supply is very concerning for me as a physician.
Yeah.
Probably not only for you.
Yep.
Around the potential increased rates of cancer and heart disease and so on in our community. Allison Hustis, executive director of the Nashwauk Watershed Association, said the river's watershed provides people with hunting and fishing grounds, spots for recreational activities, and holds traditional and heritage significance for First Nations. She said the event was also to spread awareness to those who live near the mine site and may not know how the project could affect their livelihoods. People may know that, yeah, there's going to be an open pit mine.
Yeah, how's it going to affect
realizing
me?
Realizing that, oh, wait a minute.
This will affect me directly. Mm-hmm.
We are local people. We are strong. We're united. And we won't let this go forward without a strong fight, she says. Hustis says that said she is open to dialogue with those in support of the mining project. And see, that's what you have to do. Because a lot of people are like, we're doing it. No, you're not.
Hmm.
There's got to be compromise. Yeah. Let's talk it out. Let's go through the concerns
people have. Tell us how you
can
do this safely.
Yeah.
Tell us how you can prevent the tailings pond from bursting, and what technology you're going with to prove this technology or this mining project that it won't be harmful to the environment.
And if something happens, what do you have prepared to...
Do you have anything in place?
What measures do you have in place? We're not opposed to development within the watershed, she says. We just want to make sure that the local folks and the environment are taken seriously, and we have serious issues with how things have been presented so far.
Hmm. It's a big project. We looked at some of the mock-ups of the area, the giant open pit mine, the tailings pond, the dams that they're going to be building in these valleys.
They want to dam a whole valley, right?
Mm-hmm. It's questionable.
Huh.
We'll see.
I wouldn't want one in my area.
No. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yep. Dun, 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 dun. The Tennessee River, you may not know. Apparently, kayaking is a great pastime in Tennessee.
Tennessee,
especially when the weather is warm and the summertime rains hold. While numerous lakes and rivers throughout the state have unforgettable views, the Barren Fork kayaking trip in Tennessee offers an immersive experience that feels different from the rest. Smooth Rapid Outfitters in McMinnville helps folks enjoy the beauty of the Barren Fork, one of the most out-of-the-way waterways in the state. As you paddle along the scenic river, you'll feel like you're tucked away from the outside world. Only sounds will be your paddle lapping against the flowing river, the occasional rustling of trees, and the random squawk of a bird overhead or insect screeches. So McMinnville is southeast of Nashville. So that's sort of the area we're looking at.
Yeah.
Barren Fork is named for what is known as the Barrens, located in Middle Tennessee. It's a large bare area, mainly unforested, in the middle of what is naturally a dense hardwood forest. You may even find that part of the area feels like you're tucked away in a remote area of the Ozarks, but that is part of the character of the scenic river. You'll be fully immersed and captivated by the surrounding beauty. Smooth Rapids Outfitters operates on Barren Fork, one of the least tributaries of the Collins River. At just over 23 miles long, Barren Fork flows from west to east and eventually through the town of McMinnville. It is perhaps most famous for the dam that sits just outside of downtown McMinnville. Barren Fork float flies under the radar compared to nearby Caney Fork River, which is more popular paddling during a river in Middle Tennessee. That's not a bad thing, though, and that the reason folks keep coming back to the Barren Fork, because it's peaceful, easygoing escape. Yeah, areas get busy,
yeah,
and everybody keeps going to the same area. Then you find out there's a quiet spot that not many people are going to. And you don't tell a lot of people.
No, exactly.
Because then it's going to become like the more popular places, right? They say it's not, yeah, it's not a bad thing because, you know, people keep coming back. It's nice and quiet. Yeah. It's easygoing. The relatively gentle flow of the river makes it ideal for paddlers of all skill levels. Unlike paddling on the lake, the current will keep you moving. The gentle rapids will add just enough adventure to your float. The bonus of the natural scenery of the countryside, hardwood forests, towering bluffs, makes the trip more memorable. Smooth Rapids is the place to visit if you're looking to experience the Barren Fork. Kayaks are available for rental as well as water tubes. River floats begin at $29 US person for a short float, though you can choose from adventures ranging from 2 miles to 8 miles long. 2 mile trip is recommended for families with younger kids since you'll only be on the water for roughly an hour. Because some younger kids get bored after a while.
Been there, done that.
Beginners, they're not sure if they're going to like it. You don't want to, okay, we're going to be here for 4 hours, and half hour in you're going, yeah, I'm not enjoying this. Barren Fork strikes its way through an area that's both beautiful and unsettled, one that is lush in the summer. It is ideal if you're looking for a smooth, steady current that lends itself to a lazy float. Of course, water levels can vary throughout the year, but Smooth Rapids has alternate routes in case other river conditions aren't ideal for floating. Be prepared to get wet. Wait, what?
What? In the water?
I don't think so. Bring a change of clothes, a towel, dry bag to put your phone and personal belongings. Pack a cooler with snacks, wear sunscreen and bug spray. This float is great for beginners.
Nice.
You get your kayak, paddle, life vest, and a shuttle service to and from the starting point. If you have your own boat or kayak, Smooth Rapids will provide shuttle service for a fee. There's quite a lot of paddling that can be done in the Barren Forks if you do the Google Map thing. It's 23.4 miles or 37.7 kilometer tributary of the Collins River. It's part of the Mississippi watershed. If you go on Google Maps and follow it, if you have your own boat, you can go quite the distance and have a lot of paddling, because when you go through McMinnville, portage around that dam, keep on going. Eventually, like, you'll come to other rivers and keep going and going and going. There's a lot of paddling that can be done around that area. So go check it out. The Barron's Forks. The Tennessee River you may not know about.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you live in Tennessee.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hmm. Yeah, I was Googling that and just following the water trail earlier there. And some pretty cool stuff. Some waterfalls and stuff, too. Connecticut, which isn't too far away from Tennessee. See, we're just doing this big old circle.
Yeah.
If you're in Connecticut and you've wanted to try kayak and canoeing and paddle boarding, but don't want to commit to buying the equipment, this summer is the perfect time to try. The state is offering rentals for these vessels at state parks throughout Connecticut. On a sunny summer day, places such as Mount Tom State Park are packed with people looking to cool off. Whether you're trying a paddleboard for one of the first times or kayaking to help with another hobby, people in Connecticut are itching to get out on the water. Starting now, you'll be able to rent kayaks, canoes, or stand-up paddleboards at the following state parks. Burr Pond State Park, Indian Well State Park, Lake Warramog State Park, Mount Tom State Park, and Squants Pond State Park. It's pretty cool that they're actually starting to do this sort of thing. Like, you figure you'd be able to do it all the time, like in all these places, because that's what you go out to do, right? Yeah. If you're not hiking and there's water, people want to do more than just
absolutely
swim or sit on the beach. So the fact that they're doing this now seems kind of late. But,
yeah,
better late than never. Having the equipment and instruction at the park removes significant barriers for people who are paddling, said Jeff Shaw of the Connecticut Office of Industry and Experiences. It's a partnership between the state and local businesses. You can rent the vessels for $15 to $35 an hour, depending on the state park. Probably depending on the craft, too.
Yeah.
Like a paddleboard is going to be less than a full-on canoe. The hope is that people pick up a new hobby and then stick around. They explore a town they've never visited before, they tell their friends, and then they come back again. That is tourism.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
If you own a kayak, canoe, or stand-up paddleboard already, there's a new law in place requiring if-found tags on those vessels, so if something happens, authorities can locate you.
Yeah, we found your boat. Were you on the water at the time, or did it blow away? Because we need to know, we need to find the owner or find the owner.
There's a lot of that every summer, especially if, you know, people put their boat out. They say, oh, it's up on my property. But then you get a big storm, big winds. Next thing you know, it's across the lake and somebody called, I found this boat.
Yeah.
There's nobody in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police are up and down looking. Do we get, got to call out the search and rescue? Yep.
And if you have if found, and they require it there, is if there's an if found sticker, it's like, okay, now we can track down the owner.
Yep.
Did you loan it? Were you in it? What's going on?
Yeah.
Are we looking for, are we talking rescue here? Like, what do we need to do?
You can also write that information on your vessel with a Sharpie. So on the inside there, just write it all in there. And yeah, you can give a couple of phone numbers too, just in case, because I sit there and think about it sometimes. Like, if I put my name and phone number and something happens and they try to call me,
I may not be able to answer.
I might not be able to answer. So,
give other phone numbers.
Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection says the law is in effect. And if you do not have a tag, you could face a $120 fine. It allows our NCON police to simply make one phone call to quickly ascertain if someone is truly in needs help, or if it's something as simple as losing a canoe or kayak off a dock.
And oftentimes that's the what the cause is. Like, you know, I didn't tie it up properly. The kids had it out and they didn't tie it up properly. We left it on the end of the dock, but the wind blew it off. And so 9 times out of 10, maybe that's it. But also if somebody finds a canoe or kayak floating out there, the sooner you start rescue operations, the better. So they can reach out and find you. It's like, hey, were you out in the water? No, but I loaned it to somebody. And so, okay. So it's a good idea. I've never written anything on my canoes or kayaks, but maybe I should be.
Right? Got to have that little sticker on the inside. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
For the kayak fishing peoples.
Mm-hmm. And this is becoming more and more popular. It's a cheap way to get out on the water to do some fishing and so on. So I'm not going to slam them for it. It's like, hey, you know what? And I've been on kayaks with the with these. So it's kind of fun.
Well, one of the younger guys at my work popped in my office there on Friday.
Yeah.
Someday. He came in and said, so I got a fishing kayak. And I started asking the pertinent questions about size and make and
electronics,
sit on top and all that sort of stuff. And he goes, yeah, I can add stuff later. I said, there is no I can. You will be.
You Trust will be me. Adding.
Once you have that kayak, you're going to have 6 fishing rods. Yeah. You're going to have some sort of motor. You're going to have a cooler. Yeah. You're going to have a seat. You're going to have electronics, depth finders. And he goes, oh, yeah, I need to get a depth finder. I said, see? See? You're already there. Yeah. And you just bought the kayak. Yeah.
It's like the tuner crowd or whatever. It's like kids will buy a little Honda Civic, and next thing you know, it's been squatted and nice rims, and, you know, they put a new exhaust on it. And yeah, exactly. It's like everybody wants to tune up whatever they have.
Yeah. Yeah. I said it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
It's in your future.
He gave a bit of a laugh, and I said, I'm telling you, buddy, it's happening. If you want to get out on the water, you're going to. And he goes, I've seen some of the boats out there and how they had them all decked out. Oh, and I said, that's going to be you soon. I will lay money. I will lay $100 right now.
Yeah.
Next summer, that thing is fully tricked out. And he just looked at me. He didn't take the bet.
I need some overtime.
You know it's a bad sign when you don't take the bet. Wait a minute. That $100 could buy me a new... E-Propulsion Americas, the global leader in marine electric propulsion systems and services, announced that it is entering the powered kayak market with an all-new K-Lite 750 electric outboard. Building on the award-winning technology that shattered convention with the highly portable E-Lite, the K-Lite 750 is powerful, but contained in a lightweight and compact form factor ideal for recreational or fishing kayaks alike. Coming in at under 15 pounds with 378-watt integrated battery.
Well, that's not too bad. 15 pounds, so that's the motor and the battery.
Mm-hmm. It is perfect for quick trips and carry-in access. Optional accessories allow third-party battery recharging while fishing or floating. Go mode delivers 500-watt continuous power for double tap the mode switch for a 750-watt sport burst for 60 seconds to shoot rapids or punch through rips.
Oh.
Toggle to fish mode for refined low-end control to hit every laydown and pocket. The K-Lite operates in less than 7 inches of water, or it can be adjusted deeper for big water. Huh. Rudder-shaped design steers even when the throttle is off, has a spring-tensioned mechanism that delivers up to 300 watts in reverse, ensuring the propeller won't kick up and spook fish. Spring gives way smoothly on collision with underwater objects or rocks or manual lift. Separated display keeps your eyes on the water. The sun-shaded color monitor mounts on console, deck, or track. The low-profile throttle tucks beside the seat without snagging clothing. User simply snap motor onto a mounting pin, connect steering lines and cables, and anglers are ready to fish in minutes. Unit includes a grab handle in case the mount blocks your kayak's existing carry handle. When we showed our original prototype at ICAST last year, the interest was substantial, says Tom Watson, president of ePropulsion Americas. The E-Lite has already been revolutionary for tenders and small craft, and we are confident the K-Lite is going to take kayak anglers to new and exciting places. The K-Lite will be on display at ICAST 2026, booth 1608, if anybody's going, July 14th to 17th, and will also be available for on-water demonstrations July 14th. Units will be available to purchase in August 2026. The K-Lite Electric Outboard 750 has a typical retail price of about $2,250 Canadian or $1,575 US.
Oof.
Yeah, that's the sticky point right there.
Never mind.
Everything was fantastic up until I said the price.
Yeah, never mind.
Hey, you know what? Like I say, this is...
Yeah.
There's going to be people that buy it because they... That just seems kind of pricey.
Yeah.
But there's going to be people that buy it. And they're going to go, yahoo! And like I say, with the extra little modes there, if you're going up a river and you come into a little bit of fast current, you could just hit that sport mode for 60 seconds to get you over there,
get
right?
Get to the fish quicker.
Right?
I'm looking at pictures of it online. It kind of looks I can't remember what they're called, but bass boats, they drive them into the extreme creek.
Oh, those posts at the
posts
back of the
that
boat.
Drop
that,
in. So it looks like those posts.
Like the pile driver thing.
Yeah, just to keep you in the current.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting design. And I can see how it'll pop up, and the propellers themselves are protected.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. So anybody that's getting, I'm going to take this to the guy at work and say, hey, just so you know.
Hey, buddy, look at this.
Just so you know, send me pictures when you buy one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy one, he said knowingly as he started Googling it.
Yeah.
That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
I don't have anything to add.
All righty. Hot diggity dog. I'm just looking for an excuse to stay down in this nice cold basement longer.
It is cool down here.
It's nice and cool.
I was tempted to actually put a hoodie on.
Nah, this is like, if it's too hot in the house,
mm-hmm.
we got a couch here.
Yeah.
This is where I'm coming to sleep. It'll be the place to come.
Yeah.
If you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast download sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com where you can stream or download all our episodes. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.